we have to do everything that we can do to make sure that electronics and broadband and devices are made available to each and every student within our school system. We have to make sure that we are making the necessary investments in our teachers and in our personnel.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus, and on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we're speaking with New York State Assemblywoman Latrice Walker. The Democrat has been in office since 2015, representing the 55th District in Brooklyn. Assemblywoman, I'm starting all interviews these days by asking, how are you doing?
Well, I am healthy. I am blessed that my family's healthy. And I'm learning how to be a distance learning support staff member, if you will, with my lovely 8-year-old daughter.
How is that going?
It's interesting. Let's say growing up and going to school in the 80s and the 90s is very different than going to school now. And so the way that they learn math now is so interesting. Like, you know, of course, we were taught to memorize our timetables. But for them, 2 times 2 is also 2 plus 2. And so I'm struggling with going back and forth easily in my head between multiplication and addition. So I think I have a little bit of a learning curve. And so my 8-year-old is probably teaching me more than I'm teaching her.
In all seriousness, as we, you know, we had Governor Cuomo on the station today, and he said that, you know, summer school hasn't been ruled out yet, but they're looking at things very closely. And there's a lot of question about whether students will be back in classrooms this fall. What do you think we should do here?
Well, I think that the safety of our children is supreme. These are some very interesting times, and it's going to call for some interesting measures. I appreciate distance learning thus far. And if it, you know, is determined that it's safe for our students to go back to school and return back to the classrooms, then I think that, you know, it is our obligation to make sure that all safety precautions are adhered to so that, you know, they are given a chance to grow up. This is not the first time that our country and the people of the United States have dealt with medical pandemics. And just like we've gotten through them in the past, we'll get through them now. But until then, their generation is very different. Like, you know, we were of the chalkboard and a piece of chalk generation, but they are smart boards, smart tables, iPads, tablets. And so this is basically what they're used to, you know, PS4s. And so electronics are their pencils to the universe. And so while we're thinking that, you know, distance learning is a phenomenon, for them it's Tuesday. And I think that they are adjusting superbly. And I'm very proud of all of the students in the state of New York and, of course, in the city of New York. And I wish them all well, even if they have to be in school during the summer. Some of them won't be happy about that, but it's better than sitting home and having nothing to do because we know the parks are closed. The pools are closed, and we still have to do things in order to exercise our minds and also occupy our time.
One more education question for you. Schools have said that they're still not made whole from the last economic recession. We've had this question of foundation aid hanging over New York State education for the past decade. Now, because of this pandemic, there's talk about just draconian cuts to school districts, layoffs, and things like that. What are your concerns about how we move forward here?
Well, I think there is a recalibration that needs to take place, right? And so wherever there is a new way of doing things, I'm sure there are some cost-saving mechanisms that have been received due to the fact that buildings were not open. And so maybe we could look at some of those cost-saving mechanisms and figure out how we can redistribute them into a new cycle of resources. Of course, we have to do everything that we can do to make sure that electronics and broadband and devices are made available to each and every student within our school system. We have to make sure that we are making the necessary investments in our teachers and in our personnel just so that they can keep pace and they have the devices and the mechanisms that they need to continue to be amazing teachers and administrators. And so while we're looking at doing things differently with respect to spending, of course, we should always look at our cost-saving mechanisms. And in addition to that, it's not just spending, you know, like state government don't just spend in schools. We spend all across the board. And where there are cost-saving mechanisms within our budget, it's important for us to put those resources back where we need them the most, which are in our schools. In addition to that, we have not done a lot to raise revenue within the state of New York. We think it's important for the state to utilize more revenue raises, like a peer-to-peer tax system. Maybe some of the I know there's a gaming legislation that is also upon us. And so it's our responsibility to look at ways that we can have our economy grow here in ways that we haven't done before.
You know, that raises a question about the role of the legislature these days, because obviously people are working remotely. After the budget got done, you all didn't come back to Albany by and large because of the coronavirus. So for issues like raising taxes, which the governor has sort of thrown cold water on so far, how do you approach getting that done if people aren't going to be, you know, here in Albany voting?
Well, we have come to Albany to vote, and just like we came to Albany to vote for the budget, I'm sure that everyone stands at the ready. And we went to vote. We went to Albany in the middle, or I guess in the most heightened time where I think most people's anxieties were at its height, and many of our colleagues, particularly in the New York State Assembly, were affected personally by COVID-19, and even in the face of that, you know, we sort of got ourselves together and on behalf of our constituents went and did the job that we were required to do. However, we also provided mechanisms to be in place for us to handle remote hearings, remote voting, and so we've also changed those dynamics as well. So we will, you know, rely on our leadership to call us back in any capacity that he sees fit. Presently, we are in conference, so we're having conversations with the commissioner of the Department of Labor to address all of the unemployment issues that we're facing. So government is open. We're doing what we have to do, and just like, you know, Zoom telephone calls is like, you know, I feel like I work more now that I have Zoom than I did when we were just having regular meetings. At least it was travel time in the middle of it, so you have some time to have lunch. But we're still working, and so we're not going to stop until this situation is behind us.
Okay, let's talk about your district now. You've raised some concern about the way, number one, you know, the disease is disproportionately affecting minority communities, but also how that ties into existing environmental concerns. So first question is, how is your district doing, and what are you seeing in terms of need going forward here as, you know, we sort of begin to stabilize with the fight against COVID-19?
So the short answer is the district is resilient. And so even in the face of experiencing the lack thereof with respect to access to testing early on, access to PPE, receiving tablets and devices to provide distance learning to our children, being forced to be called back to work, even in the face of fears and anxieties, we continued to move forward. There were a number of individuals who were very sick in their homes, and particularly within our NYCHA developments, we had one development where 10 seniors died in one senior development over one weekend. That was in the Woodson houses in Brownsville. And we continue to put out the clarion call because that one development, that one building, abuts a industrial park here in our community. And we know that one of the things that while New York State just did very, very inspirational and aspirational climate and energy and environmental justice changes, that we didn't go far enough to address air pollution within our communities. And so what had happened was that a community that was already being affected by under access to health care, but overly affected by upper respiratory infections and diseases like asthma, bronchitis, heart disease, that we were already going to start this process from a position of being in the rear and being further behind than almost everyone else sort of was. So we knew that where communities who were affected the most with respect to having these pre-existing conditions and vulnerabilities, that things were going to be a whole lot worse for us. And we kind of saw what we saw. But at this time, we think it's important for people to see that our health care is not about a brick-and-mortar hospital building, but it's also about the housing stock by which we live in. And for NYCHA developments to be waning housing stock, where we are seeing that our housing is making us sicker, like the mold that many of the people had talked about in many of the developments. The sort of boiler systems being so outdated and people being cold in their apartments, which is sort of also increasing their infection rate with respect to asthma and other issues. Remember, it was still kind of cold outside. So when people may have started out with just having a normal cold, because this is a doctor desert and people didn't have access to primary care physicians, they were walking into COVID infested hospitals because of something that was a common cold but exacerbated into an asthma attack and made worse by an infection of COVID. And so we think and we know that it's something that can be done, particularly with respect to the climate and to the environment. And one of those ways that I believe that we need to seek a lot of change, of course, is the investment in renewable energies and microgrids. One of the things that we've seen that here in Brownsville, Con Edison has to turn the power down in our communities when the peak loads are very high. And everyone was saying, oh, the elevators aren't working in NYCHA because they're broken. No, the elevators are broken in NYCHA because the power that was coming into our neighborhood were near brownout levels. And so there was not enough power to move the buildings, and so seniors had to sit outside and have heat strokes. And it affected Brookdale Hospital so severely that the chillers had shut down almost to the point where the hospital had to be evacuated. But again, we're a resilient community. There was a $250 million investment in renewables. We installed solar panels, and we started a microgrid project right here in Marcus Garvey Village, and we think that it's working. And as long as a microgrid can show that it can last 24 hours on its own, we won't need to rely on dirty diesel generators. And so we will, you know, of course, make sure that our air is cleaner, and we also need to make sure that air pollutants are discussed in any and all legislation moving forward, which addresses climate and the community and the environment. Thank you.
This is your hometown. I mean, you've seen the effects of this disease firsthand. How has it changed the neighborhood?
Well, it really has shown the level of reliance that we can have on one another. This has been a food desert. This community has been a food desert for very, very long, and particularly with respect to healthy foods. But we're seeing organizations who are delivering food to our seniors and our most vulnerable families on a regular basis. We're also noticing that even our schools have become sort of makeshift food hubs where people are able to go and get access to fresh fruit and vegetables as well. And so I think that that's one of the ways that I think I've been the most inspired. Many of our clergy organizations have sort of gone to do some of the wellness checks, going door to door and to many of our homes within our community to make sure that people are okay. I'm grateful that we've received masks and face coverings that we can deliver, and we have delivered face-to-face with many of our constituents so that they have the necessary tools that we need. But, of course, we are under siege by the NYPD with respect to social distancing policing, which resembles too closely to the unconstitutional. The violations of our civil rights with respect to stop and frisk is rearing its ugly head again. We are still under a federal monitor based on what was taking place under stop and frisk and the level of infringements on our constitutional rights that had taken place then. And we are, again, asking for someone, particularly at the Department of Justice, to take a look at what's happening and how stop and frisk is simply being replaced by social distancing policing in the name of keeping people safe, when you're making people more unsafe in droves, and it's just not right. And we're not going to stop until we are noticing that this policy, which is draconian, is eradicated, and we're moving more towards a community mechanism where we are doing an educational tour with individuals to know that this is a public health crisis. This is not a criminal crisis. And so that's some of the places where we are, and we need to move quickly before social distance and policing becomes fatal.
You know, I did read a study that found the vast majority of people who had an interaction with the police in New York City based on social distancing were not white. So that bears out what you're saying to a certain degree. Let me just play devil's advocate with you. You know, I think people who are policing the mask issue would say, hey, we've got to do this right now in terms of limiting the spread. And there are problems with people all over the state, but particularly in New York, who aren't listening. So how do you get people to, you know, to go along with it?
So I think, again, this is a public health crisis, right? And it needs to be handled as such, with PSAs on the radio, maybe going to the locations where, they talk a lot about young people. Go where they are. Go into social media and whatever the dynamics that you can to put sort of PSAs and Instagram and TikTok, that's where young people are congregating, and that's where they're paying attention. So I think putting up a PSA on News 12 just doesn't go far enough in order to reach the population that they're trying to get a handle on. And then they need to utilize some of our Cure Violence crisis management teams. And in order to be out in the community talking to individuals and telling them why it's important and giving them the mask that they need. Most of the young people don't have a mask because they don't want to wear a mask. They don't have a mask. And so it's like you're putting somebody, it's like you're punishing the poor, or you're punishing them because of something that they don't even have access to. And for the most part, they don't even know where to get access to them. And so I think that it's an important mechanism that we all have to enforce. I just don't think that the NYPD needs to be the first line of defense on a public health matter. And then, quite frankly, what I think is important is for enforcement to be equal across the board. And so when we see pictures of police officers smiling and handing out masks in certain communities, but in other communities, punching people in the face, spitting on them in the face, sitting on their heads, and locking up a woman and treating her like an animal in front of her child in one of the most dirtiest places I can think of, in the train station, I think it's just It puts things in my re-memory that when I think of visions of what slavery was like and what overseers were like, that this is just what gets sparked in me. And so, again, I don't think that people are saying that every NYPD officer is a racist, but I'm sure that the images that are being portrayed it just touches our sensibilities and our sentimentalities, that just reminds us of that place that we must never go back to under any circumstances, and definitely not in the face of public protection, and that this society feels like everyone needs to be protected but black and brown people across the state of New York. And I think that's just absurd.
Let me ask you one more question, Assemblywoman. We're looking at mail-in voting in the June primary. Do you think New York should have mail-in voting for November, too?
Yes, I think so. I think we need to be prepared because I think it's a proactive way of looking at things. At this point now, people are not receiving ballots in the mail. They're receiving applications for a ballot in the mail, which I think will lend to a lot of disenfranchisement of many communities, particularly our seniors who are not going to go outside to find a mailbox in order to mail off an absentee ballot application. Nonetheless, the ballot period. And so while people are sort of figuring out how this is going to play itself out for the June primary, at least we can go into November with most of the kinks sort of ironed out, and it can be the precursor and the best precursor, if you will, to a system where we're doing vote by mail in perpetuity. And I think, you know, at this point in time, I think this is where we're moving towards. Like, I would love to see automatic voter registration pass, so that can become, you know, the law of the land. And also to turn many of the governor's executive orders into law. And so it's not just an executive order where someone else can just kind of come and turn it away if there's another executive who's put in place, but it needs to be the law of the state of New York. And we need to advance more efficient and effective voting mechanisms in our state.
That's New York State Assemblywoman Latrice Walker. She's a Democrat in office since 2015, and she represents the 55th District. Assemblywoman, thank you so much for all of this time.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Stay safe. God bless you.
You too. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.